Mysterious Circumstances is an American Crimecast production. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
All right, welcome to a few last episodes of Mysterious Circumstances podcast, and I have a listener, guest host with me today by the name of Lucy. And before we get started with her, I'm going to acknowledge not really too many reviews, just one in particular. We got one for American Crime Cast for the merger. All I can say is just give us a few episodes before you start leaving reviews, because every episode's going to be a little bit different, so don't think I'm going to be, like, you know, dominating all the episodes or anything like that, like you had stated in the review. So just keep that in mind. Give us a few episodes before you start leaving reviews. I won't be joining them actually full-time until the towards the end of this month, so keep that in mind. And I suppose we can get on with the case now, and today we'll be talking about the disappearance of Madeline McCann. She was a young English girl who was on vacation in Portugal. So with that being said, Lucy, would you like to introduce yourself and maybe tell us how you got into true crime and listening to podcasts and stuff?
Sure. So I have always been into true crime. I've always been interested in missing persons cases and murder things. But I first got into podcasts when, I don't know, I got really sick one day and I started listening to Sword and Scale, and I like binge listened to Sword and Scale for about 2.5 weeks. And then from then on, I just went like more and more and more. And now I like exclusively listen to podcasts rather than actually anything else.
Cool.
I'm also a law student, so I get access to like a lot of, a lot of crazy shit.
That's awesome.
But it's good. Like basically the weirder the better.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And you actually got to meet the gentleman from Sword and Scale, didn't you?
I did, like, last Monday, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was good.
Total fangirl moment.
Yeah, so much.
What you drinking on today?
Salted caramel vodka, actually.
That actually sounds pretty good. I'm drinking coffee for the moment, but I'll be switching over to some Amber Bock here in a minute, so it'll be kind of nice. But why don't you go ahead and introduce us to this case and start walking us down a little bit of a timeline here.
Okay, so we have this 3-year-old girl. She was a week away from her 4th birthday, and they were on holiday in Portugal.
Okay, and they were from originally, what was it, Leicester?
They were from Leicester.
Leicester.
Leicester. And so they were away for 7 nights, and this was, I think, the penultimate night of their holiday. So they were due to go home the next day,
mm-hmm.
Early the morning after. And she was in a room with her little siblings. They were twins, and 1 minute she was there, and the next minute she was vanished. So the parents were actually at a tapas restaurant around the corner. They had left the kids unattended, but they were doing like half hourly checks on them. They did a check at 9:30. Yeah, 9:30 she was there, and then 10 o'clock she was gone. And basically no one has seen her since.
All right. I do know timeline-wise she was definitely checked on a few times. The family, I do know that they had reservations for 8:30 every night at that restaurant. And there were 9 of them. They were there with a few other couples. I believe it was 4.
Seven.
There were, yeah. And it was what, like 3 males and 4 females,
yeah.
I believe.
So there was Jerry and Kate McCann. And obviously they were the parents of Madeline McCann. Then there was, wait, let me find my page. There was Fiona Payne and her husband, David Payne, and they were also both doctors, so they knew Barry and Kate really well. Diane Webster, who is Fiona's mother, and Jane Tanner and Russell O'Brien, and they had their 2 children on holiday with them as well, and Matthew and Rachel Oldfield. And so there were 7 of them, and they used to go to this tapas restaurant every night, and so the media kind of dubbed them the Tapas 7.
Yep. Yeah, they would, when they first got there, they set up with the restaurant, we want this table closest to our And it's the resort is not so much like hotel rooms. It's more like little apartments. And they had like a little block of apartments that were right next to all each other. And they wanted the table closest to their specific block of apartments so that they could, you know, check on the kids. Now, the hotel did have a child care center where you could take your children and then go pick them up after you got done eating. The McCanns did not prefer to do this. They actually kept the children in the room, and that included actually Madeline and her two younger siblings, who were twins, I believe, and I think they were about a year and a half old, if I'm not...
I think like a year and a half to 2 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so...
They were called Emily and Sean.
Yeah, and they would request the table. They requested the table every night for 8:30, which, you know, not getting into theories yet, but it's kind of easy to believe that anybody with that knowledge would know where they're going to be. And the fact that their kids were not at the, the little child care center or whatever. But on top of that, when they did leave their kids in that room, they didn't lock the door. They actually left the patio door unlocked as well.
Yeah.
And what it was when they were checking on the kids that night, which they did check on, you know, several occasions, and that included a woman named Jane Turner who peeked in and checked on the kids as well. They had the back patio door unlocked, and instead of taking the extra 15 or 20 or 30 seconds to walk around to the front and keep the patio door locked, they kept the back patio door unlocked because it was a quicker distance to the restaurant. So they would just walk over to the back patio door, slide that open, walk in, check on the kids. And from what I understand, when they checked on the kids, they actually didn't check to see if they were actually there. They were just checking to make sure that they were sleeping. So I don't think they actually, really looked too closely at them.
But I think it depends on who it was, because I know Jerry early in the evening checked on them.
Yes.
And he went into the room and saw them.
Yes.
But then at 9:30, Kate was due to go and check on the kids, but one of the people who she was there with, Matthew Oldfield, he said, oh, I'm going to go check on my daughter anyway, so I'm just going to go and check in on yours. But he didn't actually go into the room to see that everyone was there. He kind of walked in, was like, yeah, bedroom door's open, everything must be fine, and then he left. So he couldn't actually put eyes on Madeline at that point.
I know at one point in time when Jerry was, and this is in a later statement made by Jane Turner, Jerry actually went to check on the kids at one point in time, and they were still there. And I believe this was about between 9 and 9:30, and they were still in there. And he had ran into another vacationer who he had talked to. And in a later statement, Jane said that she had seen him talking to this other guest, but the other guest and Jerry himself claimed that they never saw Jane. So you'll hear that statement by her. I mean, we'll get into her a little bit more later on some of the things that she said and whether or not we believe it. But apparently, I believe Jane was the one who realized she was missing. She went to check and used the back patio door at right around 10 p.m. And
no, it was Kate. It was the mother.
Jane, oh, was it the mother?
Yeah, the mother was the one who discovered she was missing.
Okay, because I know when Jane went in one of the times to check, she said that the door to the bedroom that the children were sleeping in was open, and she closed it slightly. As for her actually checking on the kids, I don't think that was very, very confirmed. Apparently, when Kate went to check on the kids, she noticed that the door was open again instead of cracked. And she said that when she went to shut the door, she noticed that the door kind of shut itself. So it was possibly from a draft from an open window or whatnot. So when she goes to actually check to see if the kids were in the bed, that's when she discovered that Madeline was missing.
I think at that point as well, she looked and saw that the bedroom window was open, and so was the shutters.
And Madeline McCann, she was, I believe, wearing pink pajamas with Eeyore. from our classic Winnie the Pooh cartoons, and she had a pink cuddle cat and then a pink blanket as well, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
The cuddle cat and blanket was still in the bed after she left.
Okay. At about this point in time, she comes running out of the apartment, and from what I understand, the first words out of her mouth were, "Oh my God, they took her."
I found some inconsistencies with this.
Okay.
Depending on what source I read, it was either Madeline's gone, she's been taken, or oh my God, they've taken her. It sounds like roughly the same until you think about the implications of each. Because one, it's quite clear, you know, it's Madeline who's been gone, someone's taken her. But then the other one kind of is a lot more vague, and it opens up to, you know, how do you know it's they? How do you know it's some people, maybe she's just walked off. There's a lot of questions about that statement that she makes.
Exactly. And that was the big part, was the implications of it. Like, who is they? You know, that really didn't make too much sense to me. But at this point in time, the authorities really didn't treat anything as a crime scene. They treated it more as a child who might have wandered off, you know, just walked around or whatever. So they really didn't close the apartment off. Apparently, they had a lot of bad judgment calls. and I know you got into a lot of the specifics on how bad they botched this. It took Interpol, I think, 5 days to even declare any kind of global, you know, missing child alert. And then, I mean, they didn't even set up roadblocks for 12 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you want to get into a little bit more of the specifics on what they screwed up?
I have an 11-point list.
Sounds
on shit
good. Let's do it.
So, as you said, they didn't put roadblocks up until 10 a.m. the next morning, which was 12 hours after she left. She was gone, you know, disappeared. They put everyone on alert for a missing child, but border police and marine police had no idea what she looked like. They didn't give out a description of her until hours after she'd actually disappeared. The officers didn't make house-to-house searches. They didn't request motorway surveillance pictures of vehicles leaving prior to Luz. Not all people actually at the resort were questioned about it. So we had a lot of British people going back and calling the British police and saying, I was there at the time of Madeleine McCann's disappearance. Do you want to talk to me? The crime scene wasn't secured for so long. We had 20 people going into that apartment before it was actually closed off for forensic testing the first time, and then it was left for 2 months, and then they closed it off again. But within that time frame, it was empty for a month and then let out to other people for a month. So
you
have such a high level of contamination. Even at the time that they were conducting checks, the officer who was dusting the bedroom window wasn't even wearing gloves, and also they let crowds gather around the apartment and around the window. And so if there was any evidence, highly likely that police would have, like, people would have just trampled over it because they hadn't set up boundaries.
That's exactly what I had read too. They didn't even get search dogs in until about 2 hours after the fact. That's when they actually started treating it as a crime scene. And like you had said, before that they had roughly 20 people walking through the apartment. They had onlookers everywhere around. That would have killed any kind of forensic evidence. You know, the guy taking fingerprints, not even wearing gloves. So,
in my research, I read that it was actually at 2 a.m. the next day, so approximately 4 hours after she went missing, that they brought patrol dogs on site. But then it wasn't until 8 a.m., which would have been 10 hours after she went missing, that they brought search and rescue dogs in.
Mm-hmm.
So they were quite delayed on pretty much everything that they did.
It was just really bad investigation. I mean, the fact that they did leave the apartment dormant for a month after the incident happened, but the fact that they had actually rented it out after that, before the English authorities started getting involved, was really sad. And what happened with the English authorities was the McCanns actually started getting implicated in a lot of things because of the way that they handled themselves. There was a secrecy type clause in Portugal when it comes to cases like this. And what happens is you're not supposed to give out any information, any kind of pictures or anything like that to the media or anything like that. So they were trying to keep everything really hush-hush, and the McCanns are trying to get their daughter's picture out as much as possible. One of the reasons is because she has a very, very distinct feature in her right eye. She has kind of like a tiger stripe going through her iris of her right eye. So they were posting pictures of her, because if somebody saw that, there's not too many people with that feature. So they were trying to get as much information as they could out of there.
From what I heard, they were advised not to release pictures of her because of that thing in her eye, because they said she'll be too easily recognizable. And if someone does have her and she's alive, it's highly likely that they'll kill her because they don't want to be caught having her.
Yes.
But then the parents released it anyway. And so that was kind of one of the things that a lot of people didn't really appreciate. They thought, well, if you want to do everything to get your child back home safe, then why are you doing this thing?
And her picture was actually, I think it was the first or second most duplicated picture of the decade in terms of any picture that was ever duplicated. And that's an actual fact right there, which says a lot. I mean, as a parent, I can kind of understand where they're coming from, but as bad as Portugal, pretty much fucked this case up, they kind of had a good point. You know, as seeing the McCanns as like, you know, well, why are you guys trying to damage your daughter's own investigation? I don't know, as a parent, I can kind of see where they're coming from. You know, that's not getting into the details of what we're about to get into with the British dogs that they had brought in. From a totally unbiased standpoint, like not looking at anybody guilty, I can understand where the McCanns were coming from with wanting to plaster her picture everywhere.
I mean, I completely understand, and I think I read a statement from Jerry McCann, the father, who said that he wanted to basically market his daughter in the way that he wanted everyone to know what she looks like. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that was completely successful, because everyone knows what she looks like. She's just one of, you know, there's images that everyone knows them. But also, when your kid's been missing for a few hours, maybe a couple of days, and you're already calling in PR people and you're calling newspapers, people don't look upon that too fondly. And so I can kind of see both sides, in that you want everyone to know what your daughter looks like for this reason, because you want to catch their abductor. But also, yeah, you can't be seen to be sort of monopolizing on that either.
Exactly, yeah. It's definitely a two-way street in a situation like that. I can kind of understand where the, you know, the authority figures are coming from, and I can definitely understand where the parents are coming from, too. I mean, it wasn't even until, what, a couple months later. Now, after the McCanns start getting more involved and start, quote-unquote, jeopardizing the case, what was it, a couple months, or was it, when did they bring the dogs in from England?
I think it might have been about 6 months later.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking it was about November or so.
Yeah.
They brought two dogs in. One was a blood-tracking dog, and the other one was a cadaver dog of sorts. They went through the apartment. Now, mind you, this is after it had already been rented out. So, you know, just keep that in mind when you're putting the theories together. But the cadaver dog actually picked up a scent behind the sofa in the apartment. When you're looking at the crime scene photos, which are very, very hard to find, there's actually a piece of luggage in the crime scene photos that is behind the couch, right about where the cadaver dog picked up its scent. So just keep that in the back of your mind, because when the authorities actually started zeroing in on the McCanns as potential suspects, that piece of luggage still remains unaccounted for. Before we jump into that, you know, like, because they had the dogs search a bunch of just items that the McCanns had.
They basically just let them go through the whole apartment. They went through all the clothes and everything that they had. As you said, the blood dog and the cadaver dog both alerted behind the sofa, and then also under the veranda by the, like, off the bedroom of the parents of the McCann children. So Kate and Jerry had a sort of little balcony off their room, and both blood and cadaver dogs alerted to that spot. The blood dog alerted to the inside of a rental car that the McCanns had rented, which we'll probably get into later.
Yeah.
The cadaver dog had alerted to the wardrobe in apartment 5A, the flower bed at the back of 5A, a white sleeveless top belonging to Kate McCann, the mother, and also some trousers belonging to her as well. He also alerted to Cuddle Cat, who was Madeline's comfort toy, also the hire car that we'll probably talk about later.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to bring up the car lineup or whatever.
Yeah.
With the McCann's rental car and then another potential suspect's car. The McCann's car was hit on inside the trunk. Now, there's actually some skeptics that claim when you're watching the video, which there are videos available of the dogs hitting on the McCann's car, that the dog's handlers are somewhat leading the dogs to that car. I personally don't put too much stock in the skepticism of that because these dogs are trained for a specific purpose. And I mean, they literally skipped right over the suspect's car, the other suspect's car, and went right into the McCann's rental car and specifically the trunk of the car.
Yeah, I read that too, that they had 15 to 20 cars lined up, including other suspects. And the only car that the dogs alerted to was the McCann's rental car. And also, they multiple times on multiple levels of a multi-story car park, they did the same. So it wasn't a one-off. It was just constantly they were saying, yes, this is the car.
Now, did they find anything in the trunk?
So in the trunk, they found trace DNA that they ended up testing. And that was quite a small sample, but maybe I'm wrong, but it's mitochondrial DNA. And so they extrapolated that and then tested it. And it came back as a 100% match for Madeline. And so a lot of people have a lot of doubts because it was such a small sample and it could have been maybe like contact or transfer DNA. But at the same time, this car was rented 3 weeks after she went missing. And so what's her DNA doing in the back of the, you know, in the boot of the car?
Oh, yeah. It's a very, very, it's very damning evidence if that is the case. But the only thing that bothers me is if this DNA was confirmed 100% by some type of authority, wouldn't that technically be enough to indict somebody on that? I'm not sure how the English law system works.
As far as I know, it was a 100% match for Madeline, but I don't know if it's limited by the sample size.
Fair enough. That would make sense because literally there's absolutely no other evidence to go on, really, other than cadaver dogs like hitting every single possible spot that the McCanns had been around, like before and after her daughter's disappearance, which is extremely curious. But this still is an open investigation, so I think it was just towards the end of last year I think it came back that DNA was 100% match.
Yeah,
they're still trying. And I mean, you look at, I don't want to say it's kind of sad, but if you look at the McCanns now compared to then, it's like they've aged like crazy. I mean, you can tell, like, you can tell they are stressed out or something.
And I mean, even though it's been 10 years, she looks like she's aged 20 years. She's just really not taking it well.
No, she is not.
You wouldn't, because your child has been missing for 10 years, but, you know.
Yeah.
She's been on them.
Yeah, and it could be her trying to hide something, or you know, them two trying to hide something. But in all reality, I what I want to know is how they were able to do it by themselves without any of the other people finding out.
I just want to interject one thing because I've just Googled it in the time that we've been chatting, mm-hmm. and apparently it was some hair of hers that was found in the car.
Okay, all right,
and that was 100% match for her.
And that was in the trunk of the car, right?
That was in the trunk or the boot of the car.
Huh. Well, I can't think of any reasons you'd want to put a child in the trunk of a car other than possibly if they're not alive, and that would, that would explain a cadaver dog, obviously, yeah. But...
And so, even if you ignore the fact that the car was hired weeks after she'd gone missing, even if she was alive at the time they hired it, it's still weird to put a kid in the trunk of the car, you know?
Yeah, and the fact that the car was not searched by the Portugal authorities just bothers the hell out of me. The question still remains is, how are they able to, if they were guilty, how are they able to cover up their child's death with nobody knowing about it and then totally get rid of a body?
I know. And so I was talking about this just before we started this podcast, and so many things point to the parents having involvement in it. And we'll get onto like all the details in a bit, but the theory is that parents covered it up and then a couple of weeks later hired a car and then used that car to move the body.
Okay.
But how would you keep a body of your child for 3 weeks before you moved it? You've got to be sick individuals to hide a body for 3 weeks and then move it. You know, yeah. It's of your child.
The thing, too, is like, at first the Portugal authorities pointed their fingers at the McCanns. They were the very first ones saying that somehow they had accidentally killed her by dosing her with some medicine, basically to make her go to sleep so they could enjoy their dinner or whatever. Yeah. And they wouldn't have to worry about taking her to the child care center. But at the same time, both of her parents were doctors.
Yeah.
So you would almost think that they would know what would be safe and what would not be safe to give a child.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
The only thing I could think of, like, beyond that, to, like, contradict that, is if she might have had some kind of allergic reaction that they didn't know about to some kind of medicine, which, I mean, it does happen, but, yeah, that, I, you know, I don't, I'm not 100% sure, so, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to jump the gun too far, but I suppose, is there any other details in this that we want to get to before we start maybe jumping into some theories here?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty much covered everything.
I'm pretty sure we have too.
Probably about ready for some theory time.
All right. Well, you said this is your strong point. So do you want to start with like least plausible to most plausible?
So there's a lot of suspects in this case. There's a lot of people that have been investigated.
There were 38 suspects, correct?
Yeah. It's crazy how many people have been investigated in this case.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start with the most tenuous and then work towards the people that I think have the most evidence
against them.
Weighted on them.
Okay.
And so there was a gentleman called Raymond Hewlett who, shortly after Madeline had disappeared, said that he knew what had happened to her. And so the police took him in, but he wasn't able to offer anything. He retracted his statement and then died a couple of months afterwards. And so a lot of people kind of think that he might have had something to do with it or he knows what's going on. But at the same time, there's quite a few times where you hear about stories where people will say they know what's going on just because they want to get, you know, preferential treatment in the prison system or they want immunity from other crimes. There's the mystery lady. That shortly after the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, a woman in Barcelona, Spain, asked two British men if they were there to deliver her new daughter. They were a little bit confused by that, and they asked her what she meant, and she kind of was just like, oh, no, it doesn't matter, and then kind of just shrugged it off, which is really super strange.
That's very, very strange.
The blonde men, who at 2:20 p.m. on the 3rd of May, which was the day that Madeleine went missing, two blonde men were seen on the balcony of 5C, which was empty and which was probably one or two doors down from the Madeleine McCann apartment. A blonde-haired man was seen in the stairwell of the McCann's block about 4 to 5 p.m. that afternoon as well.
Okay.
There's like mysterious people being seen on the day that she's disappeared.
Before we go, like, this is a huge tourist destination for people from England, right? Okay, because
British people.
Okay, because when you said blonde hair, obviously we're in Portugal, so definitely not a local, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then 11 o'clock after the disappearance had been noted, two blonde-haired men were seen in a nearby street speaking in raised voices. When they realized that they'd been noticed, they lowered their voices and walked away. There's a couple of other people who've been kind of lumped in together as just randoms, but I call it the ugly man and others. There was a blonde-haired man who was seen on the 29th of April and the 2nd of May, which was the day before she disappeared, basically loitering around the apartments, looking like he was watching it. He was described as Caucasian, mid-30s, short cropped hair, and ugly. There was also, on the day of the disappearance, a man was seen staring at the McCann's apartment block next to a white van. And then late afternoon of the 3rd of May, which was also, obviously the day she disappeared, the niece of a woman who lived directly above the McCann's apartment was sitting on the balcony, and she looked down and saw a man leaving through the gate below as though he'd come from the ground floor apartment. The thing that made her pay attention was that he looked really sneaky. He was looking around, making sure no one had seen him, and he was closing the door quietly with both hands. So he was obviously trying not to be detected. Then there's the charity men. And so a lot of witnesses came forward and said that they'd seen men behaving oddly around the area in the days and weeks leading up to the disappearance of Madeline. I think I saw a statistic that from January to May 2007, the number of breaking and entering crimes had increased by four. So that's a lot. And so witnesses described men behaving oddly near apartment 5A, which was the McCann apartment, in the days leading up to her disappearance. Scotland Yard suspected they were engaged in the reconnaissance for abduction or burglary. In the McCann's block, there were two burglaries in the 17 days before Madeline's disappearance, in which the perpetrators had entered through windows. On the 20th of April, 400 yards away from apartment 5A, a lady was in her apartment and her doorbell rang, and there was a bedraggled looking man. He said he was collecting for an orphanage in Ispiche. He was pushy, intimidating, and made her feel uncomfortable. And she described him as 38 to 45 years old. He had dark hair, a mustache, and she actually recognized him because she'd seen him twice before on the beach following children. And so on the 25th or the 26th of April, there was a tourist who rented the apartment before the McCanns entered there. So they were also in 5A. They encountered a man who was very close to their apartment, saying he was looking for an orphanage, again in Ispiche. But he was really polite and really clean-shaven, so he didn't match the description of the other guy. On the day that Madeline went missing, at 4 p.m, two black-haired men approached a British homeowner looking for funds for a hostel or a hospice in Ispiche. And then an hour later, a British tourist reported the same thing. But when authorities looked into it, there were no charitable institutions, orphanages, hotels, hospices near that area at that time. And so they think that they were trying to scam people, trying to work out where people were staying, and then would break and enter when they knew that they weren't around.
Now, I did hear a theory about a pedophile who kind of matched the description of somebody being seen with Madeline McCann on the beach. There was a witness who stated they saw a man walking with a child who supposedly was sleeping, who was wearing right about the same pajamas that Madeline McCann was wearing, and they said that he looked uncomfortable carrying the child. Like,
yeah, I think that was the Smith sighting.
Okay. Now, this gentleman eventually got incriminated in another, he abducted a 5-year-old girl, I think. It was a couple years after. I want to say a couple years. I'm not sure when he did it, but he actually is dead now. He killed himself because he basically got found guilty of abducting a different young girl who was 5 years old. But like I said, there's not too much information on him because he, to put it bluntly, he did the world a favor and shot himself. He was definitely one of the main suspects, and whether he was involved, obviously, we'd never really know now.
Yeah, I read about that, and it was, there was a couple, Mary and Martin Smith, and they were on holiday from Ireland. They said that at around 10 p.m., they saw a man carrying a child. They said it was about 500 yards or 457 meters away from the McCann's apartment, walking towards the beach. He was carrying a girl who matched the description of Madeline, you know, blonde hair, pale skin, light pajamas, and that he didn't look comfortable carrying the child, and he didn't look like a tourist as well. And so there's been a lot of chat about this because Martin Smith originally identified Jerry McCann as that person.
Yeah.
But that is contradicted by the fact that at 10 p.m. when this sighting was made, Jerry was at the tapas bar with multiple witnesses.
Yes.
And so that's kind of, as far as I know, not really led anywhere, because he's given this description of a guy who's wearing beige pants and is also 5'7 to 5'9 feet, and not a particular, you know, specific characteristics that can nail down a guy.
Yeah, and the fact that they saw him from, what'd you say, 400 to 500 yards away?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but from 400 to 500 yards away, I'm not going to be able to give a description of anybody. I don't even...
A description of anyone anyway, because I just don't pay attention, ever.
I'm one of them people who is always very aware. I'm very aware of my surroundings. My situational awareness is always like 110% for reasons unknown, but when I walk into a room, I literally scan it and look at every single person in there, and that's with, like, not even getting into true crime shit.
Either because you have kids, or because you're, like, a super paranoid person, when, yeah, I'm just, like, constantly oblivious to everything.
Yeah, I don't trust any description given any more than 100 yards tops. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's and then being able to recognize a child's pajamas, you know, from that far away, I find that highly, especially at 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. I find it very, very highly unlikely.
Probably been drinking sangria for about 2 hours.
Exactly. It's 10 p.m. in a vacation resort area. You know, it's, people don't go there for business. They go there to relax and have a good time. So, I mean, I don't hold too much stock into that, I guess, that sighting. And then along with the possible, like, child trafficking, there's two ways to look at it. If someone is going to traffic a 3 or 4 year old girl, why not traffic a couple younger kids as well? Because if you're going to get one and you're going to be within 5 feet of two more that are younger and just as easily accessible, why not take them too? Yeah. The only reasons that I could think that if she was somehow kidnapped and trafficked, the fact that two younger children, if it was one person who did it, obviously they'd only be able to take one child at a time, which is definitely not out of the realm of possibilities, but also that a 3 or 4 year old would be a lot easier to take care of and maintain than, you know, two somewhat infant children. I don't want to say infants because they were about, I think, a year and a half, 2 years old, but it's a lot less maintenance, I suppose you could say.
I've thought about that, and in that, if you look at the picture of the room, the perpetrator would have had to come through the window, across the bed, between the two twins to get Madeline. And I think part of me is like, well, why ignore the two other children? You know, if you're there to, like, steal a kid, then, like, steal all the kids.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying about, like, the maintenance, but at the same time, I don't know, I just feel like it's counterintuitive. You kind of want to, like, get in and get out as soon as you can if you're breaking into someone's apartment.
Definitely. And if you're only one person, you got a better chance at carrying out one kid than you do three. I don't know. With that being said, I suppose we could probably jump into the best theory is that for some odd reason, the McCanns were involved. I can say, before we get too deep into it, I can say I kind of discount the theory that they trafficked their own child just because of the fact of that's more of a money type thing. They were upper middle class. They were not hurting for money.
The father was a consultant cardiologist. He was earning bank.
He was balling, dude. He was a baller. I mean, that's the main motivation for trafficking not to make light of the situation, because it's a really sad thing that does happen, like, in our world, but money is the motivation for child trafficking, you know, and...
But also, did you read that before they went away, Kate was talking about giving Madeline away?
No, I did not hear
apparently
that.
Apparently, she was looking into having her adopted or giving her away to a friend, and I couldn't get fully into that because a lot of the leads were, like, archived web pages I couldn't get into.
Okay.
But it was something I saw at the last minute that I was like, oh, like, that's completely new.
Huh. I would wonder what her reasoning, I suppose, for that would be. You know, just because she was a cute little girl with no health problems, and that I know of. Obviously, I'm not a physician, but, you know, you would have to have a pretty damn good reason to give your child away. And yeah. you would think that the, I don't know, you would think that the McCanns, if it would come down to that, I'm pretty sure on both sides of the spectrum, there would be relatives that, if they wanted to unload a child, there would be relatives, like, that would say, don't, you know, we'll take her in, you know, don't freaking give her away. But that is actually pretty interesting. I had not heard that, so... I don't know, I discredit them trafficking their own child, I suppose, but with that, we jump into a possible accidental death.
Yeah, so very quickly, the Portuguese police didn't like the McCanns because they figured that they were kind of rallying around all this media, and they thought that it was too much for, you know, parents who had just had their child disappeared. They thought that maybe they had something to do with it. The McCanns hired PR people, and a lot of people thought that that was very suspicious. There were inconsistencies in statements. However, I read that the way that the statements were taken kind of led itself to a lot of inconsistencies, because the police would ask the questions in Portuguese, the interpreter would then translate the replies from English and then back into Portuguese. The statements would then be typed up in Portuguese and then translated back into English for the people to sign the statements. And so obviously that's not going to be completely 100% accurate, but you are counting on people to actually read the statements before they sign them. So that's kind of like a neither here nor there statement you can't really take much from.
Yeah.
There's stories that people say Madeline had either gotten up in the night, which comes from... On the morning of the 3rd of May, which is the morning that she disappeared, she said to her parents at breakfast, "Why didn't you come when Sean and I cried last night?" And at the time, apparently, the McCann parents thought nothing of it. And then afterwards, they thought, oh, well, maybe that meant that there was someone in the apartment. Maybe someone was trying to get in. But it obviously shows that she was awake for at least a portion of the night when her parents weren't there. And so a lot of people think maybe she got up in the night. Maybe she went looking for her parents. Fell down the steps outside of the apartment, and the parents discovered it and thought, oh crap, we can't be seen to have caused this because we left her unattended, and so we'll kind of cover it up. The other, obviously, main theory is that they were sedating their children. Again, not really substantiated, but it's a common theory. Other people are postulating that she left the apartment and fell in a construction site nearby, or a well, or a lake, or just any number of hazards that are found on the road between the apartment and the restaurant.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reasons that people dislike the McCanns are kind of like behavioral and inconsistencies in statements. And so the police asked Kate McCann 48 questions during an interview, which she declined to answer.
Yeah.
And so these questions include, when you entered the apartment, what did you see and do? Where did you look? What did you touch? Another question was, did you look inside the wardrobe in the bedroom? Why had the curtain behind the sofa in front of the side window been disturbed? Had someone gone behind it? How much time did you spend searching in the apartment after you realized she was missing? Why didn't you ask the twins what had happened to their sister? There was a lot of inconsistencies that the police tried to address, and Kate McCann just said, no comment, no comment, and just refused to answer it completely.
She didn't have any real reasoning for refusing to answer any of those questions,
no,
correct?
No, she didn't. And so a lot of people saw that as a sign of guilt, because if you are refusing to answer something, but you're innocent, that doesn't ever happen, really. Like, the only time you refuse to answer something is if you've got something to hide.
Yeah, exactly. I think at that point in time, she basically said she doesn't even care how she looks anymore, to the public.
So, also, the DNA found in the car that was hired 3 weeks after Madeline went missing matched Madeline. The Sapa 7, as they were called, refused to participate in a police reconstruction of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
There were inconsistencies in their statements as to whether they entered through the front door or the back door, and if the front door had been locked or not. Why did Kate run back to the tapas restaurant when her twins were still in the apartment? Because if you've got a child who's just been taken, you don't leave your other children unattended for any longer than they need to be.
Exactly.
Either because she had the option of just yelling from the balcony because they would have heard her. And a lot of people were questioning why she did that. She could have called on her phone, she could have just screamed for them. And that a lot of that seems wrong, because as far as she knew, if she didn't search, the abductor was still in the apartment, ready to take care of the kids.
Yeah.
Then there's the statement that she made as she was running back to the restaurant. Did she say they've taken her, or did she say they've got her, or someone's taken her? That's like a bit of a gray area, but also, again, it's kind of like, why would you assume that it's some people have taken her? Why don't you say, she's gone missing, or, I can't find her?
Exactly.
Jane Tanner's description changed a few times, and as from what I've heard, it got clearer as time went on, which is almost, impossible.
Yeah.
She started out saying, it was a bundle. A guy was carrying a bundle, and then morphed into, this guy was carrying a small child, 3 to 4, wearing pink pajamas, just like Madeline. But also, she didn't say anything at the time that she saw this, so it can't have been that unusual for her. There were no footprints on the bed, and so if someone had climbed in the window from the outside, they would have had to step on the bed to get into the room, and there were no footprints, the bed wasn't disturbed, anything like that. The only fingerprints on the window are Kate McCann's. A lot of people are putting stock in the fact that she didn't cry on camera when she was getting appeals to find her daughter. They said, she's just emotionally numb, she's not fighting anything. However, I have read that she had received coaching from abduction experts that said, don't show any emotion, because if the abductor still has your daughter alive, they'll really take pleasure in that.
Yes, they would.
I've got a whole section on the shutter, because this was a big part of the case. And so the shutter was a metal one that was raised and lowered from a cable on the inside of the apartment, and it couldn't be raised from the outside. When Kate discovered that Madeline was missing, she said the shutter was open, but had been closed when Maddie was put to sleep. Jerry McCann, the father, then said that he went outside and tried to see if he could open it by himself, and he could. However, the police then checked it and said there's absolutely no way that you could open the shutter without causing a lot of destruction, a lot of evidence and a lot of noise. So that was kind of another thing, that was it open or was it not, kind of things lead you to believe that it wasn't open. There's the sniffer dogs that alerted to a lot of things in the apartment, a lot, as I mentioned before, the wardrobe, the flower bed, Madeline's cuddle cat, the items of clothes from Kate McCann. And then also there's some behavioral aspects, the McCanns didn't appear to be physically searching for her once they discovered that she was gone. They kind of sat around and told other people and waited for other people to search for her. I heard reports that they kind of just sat on the bed and let other people look for her around the apartment.
Yeah.
That when reports came that possibly 14 sightings of Madeline happened in Malta, they said, we would go, but we've also got a TV appointment in Germany, so we're going to go to Germany. And I don't have kids, but if I had lost my kid and people said, she might be in this country, I would be there as soon as I could. I wouldn't say, but I've also got an appointment in this other place, so, sorry, you're going to have to wait. That's just completely counterintuitive. The allegation that Jerry McCann had said, a couple of minutes after she was found missing, that, she's probably been taken by paedophiles. How would he know that? Why would that come to his head? And also that shortly after this whole thing went down, they returned the twins, Emily and Sean, to the resort crash. despite the fact that they didn't know who had done this, and maybe it was an inside job, maybe it was staff, maybe it wasn't, you know? So they kind of were just kind of liberal about their whole, you know, their kids' welfare. And this evidence was so strong that the Portuguese chief inspector, Chief Inspector Amaral, he quit the force and wrote a book basically saying that he 100% thinks that Madeline died in the apartment and that the McCanns have faked an abduction to cover it up.
Couldn't agree with you more, actually. No, just the fact that the cadaver dogs, even after, you know, X amount of months, still picked up on a scent, whether it was, personally, I think it was definitely an accidental death, and I think the McCanns basically wanted to cover it up. But at the same time, if it was an accidental death, I don't see why they would feel the need to cover it up. Because, you know, if it's not done on purpose, obviously they wouldn't, you know, incriminate themselves. But maybe it was a, you know, I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look like a bad parent type of deal.
And so, like, I've thought about this a lot in that if they didn't do anything wrong, why would they hide it?
Yeah.
But also, I don't think, like, I have absolutely no mind to think that it was an intentional murder.
Yeah.
I think if it was a parent, the most reasonable explanation would be that she was alone and she came to some harm by either being by herself or if they decided to give her some sedation, which was based on, you know, the night before they realized that she'd been awake. Maybe they increased it or maybe, you know, she was awake looking for her parents and some accident befell her and she ended up dying. And so they didn't want to seem like the parents who neglected the child and they maybe staged an abduction. And so this is one of the cases that I truly have no opinion on because there is so many evidence to one side and also the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cases that I can look at evidence and say, okay, it was definitely the parents. Yeah. It was definitely this. But this is one that kind of just pulls me both ways. And so how bad can it have been if the parents had said, yeah, look, we left them by themselves, you know, prosecutor, as opposed to now, it's been 10 years on and they've been concealing this accidental death for so long. It baffles me.
Yeah, you know, to touch base on what we had talked about a little bit earlier, like, because she had been awake and they didn't want to take their kids to the child care center, personally, I think they might have tried to sedate her so that she would stay asleep because this was their last night there. I'm sure they probably were trying to enjoy a nice dinner and whatever else. But at the same time, you know, it can go two ways. They were both doctors, so they would know how much their child would be able to take and not take of sedation. But you never know because sometimes, whether you know it or not, your body can have an allergic reaction to everything. So, I don't know. Personally, I think it was definitely accidental. I think they might have tried to sedate her, and I think she might have had, like, some kind of allergic reaction to whatever they might have tried to sedate her with. And then, because there's no other reason for cadaver dogs to pick up on a scent in the trunk of their car and in the apartment that they had stayed in, and then the hair in the trunk, you know, the DNA and all that stuff, and I don't know, to me that's like really the only thing that makes sense. But I do think that some of the other party, some of the top of seven, I think there's probably more than one or two or three of them that know what happened.
Oh yeah, and so I think a lot of news outlets came out with this theory that they had made a pact of silence, and they said, oh, they're all protecting each other because no one wants to accept any blame, and, you know, they kind of got each other's backs on this, and that's why none of them are talking to the media, none of them are cooperating with the police. Yeah. And so I kind of do believe it in a sense that if you are in that situation and you've all been leaving your children unattended, you kind of want to cover up all of it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah.
To me, it's a pretty much all-around shit show. But to me, I mean, personally, and this is just personally, that to me is the only thing that, like, makes sense, like, in the wide spectrum of everything, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I suppose with all that, that's pretty much all I got. So is that about everything you got then?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the episode, and thank you, Lucy, for knocking this one out of the park. You really really did your shit on this one.
I tried so hard.
It shows. You did a phenomenal job. You really did.
I have 12 pages of notes.
I had 0 pages today. I didn't have time to really write too many notes down because of the weekend and stuff, and had a bunch of stuff going on yesterday, going to Delphi, Indiana, where them two young ladies were murdered and stuff. But yeah, I greatly appreciate you kicking ass on this case, and I'm pretty sure you'll definitely get some good feedback out of this. So thank you again for joining me. I greatly appreciate it. And to all you other listeners out there, until next week, I'll see you guys on the flip side.